Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
Hey, Christy.
Hey, Maggie. How are you today?
I'm good. I think everyone should know where you are right now and your dedication to this podcast.
We're on spring break, so I made a last minute decision to join my family in Belgium. So it's nighttime here. It's midday for you there. And just, you know, sometimes we need to just a getaway to like fill our buckets and allow us to continue doing whatever it is we want to do. So that's really what this trip is about for me. But yes, so I'm in Belgium eating chocolate at all these little chocolate shops. Tomorrow we're going on a self-guided chocolate tour. We're going to hit all the chocolate shops in Bruges and Ghent, which are closer to the coast, I think. We'll see. I didn't plan anything. I just am showing up.
And like, I'm going to go.
Yep. That is my state of mind right now. Like, I was like, I don't even know what's in these cities, but hey.
Well, I mean,
it's fun to be a fellow follower on a journey, just like we are sometimes in the playroom.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, we joked because we were together a lot last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I get this text message. I'm on vacation. I was like, well,
where?
Where'd you go? You're like, Belgium. I'm like, well, that's a big jump. But yeah.
I feel like we need to tell our listeners also what's happening. I know we alluded to it a little last week, but Play Therapy Space is kind of our new brand, which we're really excited about. And we've been working with an amazing human being who helped us hone in and zone in on kind of what is our brand and stuff for this podcast, but also for our website that we're going to be launching hopefully in the next week, called Play Therapy Space. And that will grow and develop over time is our hope. So we will try to keep you updated on what those things are, but we're excited to share that. Hopefully our podcast next week will have new backgrounds and some other stuff. So we're just becoming official, Maggie. This is no longer like a little pet project that we took on.
No, it's so fun. And so Natalie Horner at Peppered Labs was so spectacular and really like listened and saw and explored. And so I highly encourage everyone to go to the website, and we have a list of books that we recommend and why we like them and what our favorite quotes from them are. And I just think it's a really cool thing. So hopefully, you know, we love feedback and like what it is that you might like or look forward to. But yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, no, we're excited. I think the website really pulls together what our intention of this podcast is, but also of our collaboration together, if that's in writing or if that's in trainings or whatever that may be, consultation work, potentially in the future. We're kind of open. So if you guys have feedback, don't forget to email us.
Yes,
and let us know.
New emails now.
Yeah.
I have new emails through the website that are official. Mm-hmm. Once I figure out
the email.
I'm struggling with it because technology is hard for me. I'm like,
me too.
Yeah,
I know. That's why we hired someone to help us, because
yes. Yes,
we can write and we can train and we can talk all day long about play therapy, but you ask me to do something on technology and you'll see me in tears crying and throwing my hands up and having no perseverance or grit.
No, none whatsoever. I know, it's sometimes I'm like, golly day, I'm just like my 8-year-old. Like, I just want to like cry and yell and like scream at somebody. Like, that would be really good for like 0.25 seconds if I could just get it out. It probably means that I need to like exercise or go outside and go for a walk and recenter myself, or sleep. That would also be helpful.
Both Maggie and I are lacking in sleep today. So this should be a fun podcast.
Yeah, seriously. Right?
Who knows which direction we'll go? We already have squirrel moments. So just wait until you get us both exhausted and not able to hone us in like in a narrow path. That'll be fun.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Thank you. Like, you're pepping me up because I feel like I was like powering. Okay, so you had some ideas of what to talk about.
Yeah, so I thought we could talk about tonight or today, tonight for me, when we're just low on empathy, when our clients are really frustrating. They're either stuck or pushing back. And so empathy is hard to find in the playroom.
I've had this happen a couple times, and I talk with supervisees about it a lot. And I even think, like, I still remember going back, and I don't know if you were in this class, Christy, but Dr. Aaron Turley, who is a cohort member of mine, sometimes, like, when you're a student and you're seeing clients, you're kind of overwhelmed and you're exhausted. And little did we know that those were like the best years of our lives. Like, we wouldn't have all the guardrails and still have all of those feelings. But I just remember her being like, "Hey guys, let's stop for a moment because it feels as if we're being really unkind and judgmental towards our clients in this moment." Even though we were just kind of like riffing and just kind of, not necessarily about our clients, but more just about us. And I think of that a lot. When, especially when I'm teaching like practicum and internship and supervision, about like how is it that we are responding to our clients and conceptualizing them? And one big thing too, Christy, I'm sure you share this, but like resistance, this idea of client resistance. And so often I feel like people use that as an opportunity to be like, oh, it's the, I feel like it puts a lot of onus on the client. And I try and reframe it, like, or maybe they just don't trust us yet. How do you reframe it? Because you're.
I think I'd go internal first in the sense of like, where is my level of unconditional positive self-regard? Where is what's going on for me that, because it, I think I could say for both of us, right, that we tend to be very empathic. We tend to really understand other people. And so when this is coming up, I sometimes think about, okay, what's going on my plate that's making it hard for me to accept, reflect, understand my clients? That, yeah, I think that's where I tend to go. So maybe some self-loathing and some other stuff, ways to beat myself up. But it can be hard. And sometimes just stepping away. I also, we've talked about this before. Sometimes I'll call Maggie for consultation to just be able to say it to someone who's not directly associated with the scenario to help like kind of reframe it, especially if I'm noticing myself kind of stuck in a negative loop with a client. Because it does happen.
It
And just being
absolutely
able to hear a different perspective helps us kind of figure out what's going on. The other thing I remember, I was doing supervision actually with Eliana Gill at one point, and she kind of really helped me reflect about maybe what I am experienced by lack of empathy, like really flipping it on what do you think the client is experienced that is showing this behavior and like seeing it again, like kind of flipping the perspective of, like what do you think this client needs in this moment from you to make this better? So what is this behavior about? And I'd love to talk as we go on. A colleague of mine, Dr. Daniel Austin, in our elementary education department, and I actually created a protocol for teachers that I think can sometimes be applicable here around, we call it better understanding your students, the BISE protocol, but kind of helping you to flip that switch and really kind of fine-tuning how to do that. We share this a lot with teachers, caregivers. It can be helpful because you can get out what you're feeling, right? And then really what supports that feeling for you. So you can kind of identify what's happening in the relationship, and then you get to flip the script a little bit. But we can talk about that in a little bit.
No, why don't you talk about it now? Because I think it's really interesting, and because it's acknowledging both that like you're a human and having a response, and like, well, how do I, what is this telling me, right? Like, if our emotions are communication, right? Like, and their emotions, how can we like use these to understand ourselves and each other better?
I could speak off the cuff, but I can also pull it up really quick. I was looking from it. I was like, where is that? So it is a 5-step protocol, and you can add a 6th step to it. But the first one is that elevator speech. You know, like, what are you saying about this client? Or if you're working with a teacher, what is this teacher saying to other teachers in the break room, in the lunchroom, right? About the child that you're speaking of. And just in the moment, you don't have to guard your words. You don't have to do anything. Just put it down on paper, you know, a quick 2 to 3 sentences, maybe a short paragraph where you just kind of dump it externally for yourself. And then the second step is identifying the behaviors that support how you're feeling in the moment. So really looking behaviorally. You can go emotionally too. So if it's like impacting you in any ways, you can put that down, right? But like, what about what the client is doing is causing you distress or difficulty understanding empathy? And then this is where you start to flip the switch or the script a little bit in your perspective. So from taking the exact behavior or emotional response, right? Now think about what is the client trying to tell us? Because we often say on this podcast, right? Children's behaviors are really their best form of communication to tell us where they're struggling, where they need support, where they need to connect, right? So now let's look at what are those. So say a client is, maybe a client is like super messy in the playroom and like inconsiderate from your perspective of your materials, the cost of your materials. So maybe they love art supplies, but it doesn't seem like they're playing with them. They're just kind of dumping things on paper, right? And this is going on week after week. And it's really challenging because I want to, and I hear this a lot from supervisees, like, why does it matter? Like, maybe this client doesn't have a lot. So in this space, they can have a ton of staff, right? So they have a lot of choice. And I often say, like, is that fulfilling your need or the client's need, right? Like, how many pom-poms does a kid need to get their need met? And so if the thing is that they're wasteful of materials or inconsiderate of materials, right? Maybe what is that client trying to tell you, right? Maybe the world feels so out of control, they don't know how to stop themselves when their need is met. Or maybe they feel like they're supposed to use all the materials in the playroom. And so, right, they're just kind of putting them on paper with glue. Maybe it is, I don't know, what might you think, Maggie, if that was your client? Maybe what are they trying to share with you through that behavior?
I think sometimes I've seen it where, and especially like if there's already been limits set around it, is like, do you still accept me?
Yeah, so maybe they're testing the limit. Or maybe they're asking for boundaries. They don't know how to put boundaries up for themselves. So they're, you know, like, I don't know how to stop myself. I need support, right? And some of this is going to
So
come
many
from your
things.
feeling in the relationship, right? Like, we can't just prescriptively tell you this behavior means this. And if people are telling you that,
That's
be weary of that because that there is no one behavior that is predictive of the next behavior for
no,
kids.
and I think, yeah, well, no, I mean, it's like it could be so many things. It could be that a child is like not doesn't have access to a lot of things, and so they finally do have access and they want to like use it all up before it leaves. There's so many different things that it could be, and it's, but I think, like, to your point, is like knowing this child. If I'm trying to understand them, how can I understand them more than just they're using all my materials?
And then I think being reflective of like, why am I reacting that way to this? Like, what about this? So if it's a financial reason, that gives you information about maybe you need to set limits or, you know, like whatever. But to be reflective on yourself too in this process. So it's not just reflective on the child because so you're going to do that for if you do 2 or 3 behaviors that support your statement about your client, then you're going to flip those 2 or 3 behaviors or emotional response, right? Like underneath about, well, what is this child trying to convey to you, right? Like, how is this their chance to message their need to you, right? And so you're going to flip that. I do want to say really quick before I go on, this is not happening in session, right? Like these steps are happening outside of session, potentially in supervision or when, you know, like at the end of the day, when you're self-reflecting on a client. And I think as we get better at this, it happens in shorter periods of time. The first few times, it does take a while to sit and work through it. And I say with a supervisee or a consultant, because sometimes it's helpful to get another person's perspective, because sometimes we're just stuck in our own narrative about what's happening, that it's hard for us to see an alternative perspective. And I found that really true when I was first starting out, right? Like just kind of maybe jumping to conclusions, or like my own biases were getting in the way here. So step one was putting out your elevator speech. Step two was writing things that support your elevator speech. How did you come to that conclusion, right? Step three is flipping it about what is the child trying to tell you? Step four is holistically looking at what the child's trying to tell you, and you coming to include conclusion of what do I think this child needs from me, right? And in the space in the playroom with me, or if we're working with teachers, right, in their relationship, or if we're working with parents on this, really, it can be any person that really spends time and cares about the kiddo. So what is the one thing? I try to pin it down to one to start off with. It's funny because we talk about this in like child-parent relationship training too, when we're giving feedback or guidance for a parent's next session, to not overwhelm yourself. So just think about what is the one thing I'm going to walk away here in this moment. You might have 10, but let's focus on one, right? What does this child need from me and maybe the people in their lives for them? And then the next one is a self-reflection. Do I have the capability and capacity right now to do that? And if I don't, what do I need to do to get myself there? Because that's really our job as a therapist, right? Is to be able to be emotionally present and responsive to our clients and our relationship with them. And so that's the BIAS protocol in like a nutshell. We pilot this with a group of teachers right before the pandemic, and really found it to be a helpful tool for them. Oftentimes, because when someone is in school environments, right, like sometimes we can get in groupthink and group narrative talk about people, but those labels get stuck on kids, which feels unfair to the child. And so it offers an opportunity to like kind of get unstuck in our systems so that we're not causing undue harm to kids, allowing our biases to kind of run rampant and not give them a fair chance. And if it's education or if it's wherever, but also then to be proactive and supportive for this kiddo. Like, what about really owning the relationship part of how we can make shifts for kids by connecting through understanding of what the child's needing in that moment? And a lot of the teachers, so we worked on it in groups with teachers, and then they started to use them in their PLC meetings each week. So if someone started to talk about it, another teacher would self-correct them out of the kind of elevator negative talk about students, and helping them to like think about a different perspective, which I think can be a really, it's a really supportive, strengths-based mindset that can happen to help shift teachers in a school setting, right? I've used it with parents before at home. Like, what are we doing? Let's talk about what's happening. What message are you telling yourself about this? You know, and then like, what support do you need to be able to provide something different for your kiddo? And maybe you already know what to do. It's just a harder task to do in parenting. And then for myself, I use it, and I use it with supervisees too. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's like a tool you can use. It doesn't fix in the moment, but it helps you be more reflective long term about being responsive to kids in the play space.
No, I think it's so helpful, and it's like it made me think of even I like wrote down like remember talk about this because my own child as you're kind of doing this I was like, "Oh, maybe I can understand this differently." 'Cause they really struggle with people using their things. They don't like to share. And then if they do share, they're like, "Well, you need to get me more because they used it all." And I'm like, and so in my mind, I guess, like from my experience, it's like a scarcity thing. Like, you know, I didn't have enough money growing up. I had fine money, but like, you know, I wasn't able to do all these like crazy things and have Amazon markers delivered to me, you know, the second I wanted them. But really, as you're talking, I was like, I wonder if part of it is because as the younger child, they don't have many things that they're their own that are just for them. And maybe
But it could
not, like
also.
that may not be it, but that helps me kind of respond in a way that's much kinder than like share, like get over it.
I also sometimes think, we just automatically assume kids want to share and they invite friends over to share. That may not be why they invited their friend over, right? Like maybe they didn't know their friend was going to use up all of their Play-Doh today
Right. I
or
know, I'm
mixed
like,
colors because they have a, like for themselves, they don't like things to mix, right? But then someone else comes in and changes the scenario and aren't quite sure how to advocate for themselves or share where they're getting stuck.
yeah. It also reminds me, I had a case when I was in school, and this child always wanted to pour bubbles on the floor. And I would like set the limit, and I would set the limit, and that, and I'm like, you chose to do that anyways. And I'm sure I had like a hint of like annoyance, if not hint
Oh, just
assuming
even maybe your
time,
tone.
right? Like you decided to do that
Yeah.
anyways, because bubbles, and it was linoleum floor, so it gets really soapy, and it's a
Yeah.
lot, and it's hard to clean up. And so when I went to supervision, I was glad that I felt safe enough in that relationship to say, I'm getting frustrated.
Yeah.
And they like help me kind of process through this and like, what does this mean? And like, how does this relate to presenting concerns and what you know? I was like, well, why are you so upset about bubbles on the floor? Right? Like, that's like not, we had people to help us clean up the rooms. Like, this was like the, I'm like, and it was because it took a long time to clean them, get it all up so it wasn't slippery. And I had class right after. And I didn't want to get in trouble for being late. And I was like, okay, well, that's valid, right? Like, that makes sense. So how can you set limits around it that that child still can do what they need, but you aren't worried about being late to class? And so it was like, well, I don't, they need the bubbles, so I shouldn't take the bubbles away. But what if I just didn't fill the bubbles up all the
Yeah.
way? Like, then I wouldn't have a whole container of bubbles. I would just have a little bit of bubbles, and that would be allowed. And then it's like, if you choose to pour, then the limit became, if you choose to pour the bubbles, you choose to leave 5 minutes early so I can clean them up. And then it kind of took all of that away from me. I didn't, that stress or that fear was no longer present. And so then I could come back and empathize with the child because it was important to them, because like they did it every week. So it was meaningful for them in that moment. And
And
that's
I think this
helpful.
is, yeah, Maggie, I was thinking as you were sharing that story, sometimes this is why it's important to video record your sessions. Because in the moment, you don't hear your tone, but like, how often do we relay not actual messages, but the tone in our message conveys like something different than we think our words may be conveying?
When we use that, this example, exactly what you're saying of how maybe our words and our tone isn't conveying. When we, I showed videos of me doing play therapy with my child, and it was so incongruent because my child was really sick and he was really angry, and I knew he didn't feel good, and he was having to be at work with me. And I was making him record, I mean, I wasn't making him record play therapy videos. He wanted to go to the playroom, but I was like, I'm going to use this as an opportunity. And he wanted to punch me in the face. And I was like, you're really me, because I was knew he didn't feel good. It's like, and in that moment, had I not watched it back, I wouldn't have realized how incongruent
Yeah.
I was. Because I was like, oh, I'm really helping out. Like, I'm not worried that he's like, I think, what did he say? Do you even remember? I think it was like, I'm gonna be mad, or I'm angry. And if I'm angry, you'll be sorry, or something like that.
Yeah, some it was like a threat. I do
It was
remember
definitely
that.
a threat. And he was like
Yeah.
four, so it's like sweet
He
little
also has
thing.
the biggest heart and that he would not do something to intentionally. Do you know what I mean? It was like a I don't want to call it a power move, but it was like a way to regain a sense of power in that moment. But yes.
Which also relates back to what we talked about last week in trauma, about the needing to have the toys in the right spot. He was looking for a toy that was supposed to be there that wasn't. And so we took away his power in that moment, and he was trying to regain it.
Wow. Yes.
Sweet little
Yeah.
thing. He was
I
so sick.
know. I also remember, I think it was Dr. Landreth who used to say this, when kids are doing things that are frustrating, right? They need to hear acceptance from us. So our tone needs to get more empathic and less firm. Do you remember that?
No.
I make that up?
No, probably not. I mean, like, because I do it, right? It's like I get softer, I get lower, I get slower.
Yeah, but like how important that is as kids are feeling like if they're having difficulty regulating in the moment or they're wanting to test like limits or test your level of acceptance, right? Like sometimes we have to match that with more empathy and more acceptance. It was Dr. Bratton who said that. I can't remember, but it was like a really light bulb moment for me, like, oh, because I think most people get firm, right? Like to try to kind of set the rule or like set the
Regain
tone in the room that
power.
this is not going to be okay. But we really do want to get more empathic along the way. Taking the training is important. Just reading the book is not enough, or like
No.
co-facilitating is not enough. But just kind of the idea of like when it's hard to find empathy in the room, right? So here we're saying being using your tone, right? But that means you have to have a lot of awareness of where you are empathically. And if you're struggling with that, then that is harder to do.
Yeah. I've had like two clients that I really did very much struggle. And I was really lucky because when I was seeing both of them, I had access to someone that I trusted that I could be like help me figure this out. And I think like again, like what's going on with me, right? So like one was I was just out of my doc program. I'm trying to demonstrate that I know I'm a professional. And this child wanted nothing. Everything that I did sucked. And I had never had a child at this point refuse to engage so much that their back was against the wall and they never turned around once for all 45 minutes. Every time, and really didn't want to be there, and was really struggling with like a lot of intense like stuff that was happening where because of this stuff, there was a lot of rejection. And so I called Dr. Casey Lee and was like, help me. And it was so helpful because she wasn't like, it's like, so what if he doesn't play, right? But there's something about it that you're like, what am I doing wrong? And so it's easier for my ego at that moment to like project that something else is happening. And she was just like, how badly does this child fear being seen? And being like, how low is that self-concept that they're scared? Like they're like just outright, like the self-control that they have in that moment to keep themselves. And that was such a help for me for this child. Like it was just shifted everything. And I would see how others would respond to this child, like in their lives, and the like passive aggressive rejection that was happening all around this child. I was like, I can be different. And that was really impactful.
Yeah, I was also thinking, it's so interesting as when we're doing some supervision and some other stuff, what we choose to focus on. Are we focusing on the kid or do we focus on the supervisee? Because in that moment, I was wondering, like, I wonder how parallel this is for both of you, like his fear of rejection and also your fear of rejection at the same time, right? Because that's really what sometimes those behaviors feel like to us. It can feel rejecting to us, which is really hard.
When it's like,
So I was just
especially,
wondering, yeah.
oh, I'm sure there's a lot of that, and we didn't go that deep. And this is also why I think it's helpful to have people around you that you can have these conversations with. I was gonna go, oh, this is so one of the things that we always did in school that really is not child-centered whatsoever is the personality priorities. And I think that's
Oh, yeah.
really helpful. So Adler had these ideas about personality priorities, like pleasing, superiority, control, and comfort. And so I always try and also understand, like, how is this pressing up against me? And that's what you're bringing in, is that I'm a pleaser.
Yeah.
So if I think someone is mad at me, I like kind of decompensate. Poor Christy has to deal. I'm like, are you mad? Did I do something? Are you upset with me? And she's like, dude, I'm just on a plane to Belgium. I'm sorry I didn't text you right back.
Whatever.
You know?
That did not happen, by the way.
No,
But
it didn't.
yes.
But it is
But
like you have to remember those things of like, oh, this is what's coming out for me.
yeah.
That was really, I hadn't thought about it that way, how it was a dual process in that moment.
Well, I also think it kind of goes to that idea of like, we can't always fix the problem, but we can help better understand it, right? Like, our goal is not to fix all of our clients' world, like they're, how do I phrase that, Maggie? We don't need to fix maybe like the structural or other things in the family. It's helpful to change that, right? But it's not our job to fix it. It may be helpful to identify it, and it may be helpful to challenge some of that stuff. But holistically, right? Like, it's our client's responsibility to do that, or it's our client's worlds to do that. And same like for our supervisees, or for you or I in the playroom. Sometimes when kids get really frustrated, we're really just hyper focused on behavior that we want to see different, instead of going towards understanding and hanging in that environment with our clients.
Yeah. And I really like the kind of like acronym and like the sequence that you did. And I think that's a lot of times like what we try and do in supervision is like, okay, so what is this pressing on for you? What's going on for you in this moment? What do you think this child's trying to communicate to you? You know, is it really I hate you and you suck, or are there other things that could be coming into play? You know, what does this child's world look like? And I think it not only helps you empathize, but then it helps really hone and allow those reflections to be more meaningful. And again, it's like, do we know exactly? No. Are we making educated guesses based upon our understanding? It's like we have all of these didactic classes and then we put them into like practice within our clinical classes, and then we do this, you know, the however many years of supervision, and at some point you have to kind of figure out like that intentionality of like, this is what the course, like the book learning has taught me, this is what my therapist learning has taught me, and this is how I think they're coming together.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
It's not just like we're coming up with like we're like this is, because I think sometimes that's a pushback from people who are learning about play therapy is, you're telling the child how they feel.
Oh, yeah, no.
And because, like, the reflections, like, you're really frustrated, you're really sad, you're really wanting to.
Well, right, even that language I think we've talked about before is really counter to how we're trained to talk to people as adults, right? Like, we use a lot of I language, especially when we're talking about maybe partner to partner conflict, right? Because sometimes the user actually accusatory rather than like a need to understand. And when Maggie's saying you feel like want, you need, that language is more about trying to really understand what's going on for the child, not about accusing them. And I think that goes back to where your tone is, right? And like what your intentions are in those moments. And sometimes that's harder to regulate as a therapist when it's hard for you to empathize or to connect with this child. So sometimes going back to foundational skills, go to tracking for a little bit, reflect to get your brain back in it, to get out of your own state, to really reconnect with this kid. So track, share a feeling or two if it's obvious, right? Help you like grow in that, the state of like kind of really seeing what's under the issue, under the problem, not really just what the behavioral or the frustrating moment is.
Yeah, like not just what they're telling you, but what they're like what they mean. And I think that it's like you have to go deeper than the words, you have to go deeper than the behavior. And I think that's like a big crux too of what child-centered is that we're trying to understand this child holistically, and if we are capable of recognizing and understanding ourselves holistically, right? And like, this is what's going on for me, then we can do that in that moment and have the empathy that it's about really trying to understand and believe in their capacity and their goodness and their abilities. And that they're really working very hard to communicate their world. And how can I understand it?
You know, another thing as you were talking, and I was like trying to recall cases. The other thing I notice is my frustration tolerance shrinks as my day goes on in the playroom. So sometimes it's really more about me or my bandwidth to be fully present with kids because I feel spent. Right? Like sometimes it's my last line of the day. And, you know, like I jokingly say, like, how does someone know to put this kid on my schedule at the end of the day instead of at the beginning of the day? Like, this kid would be easier for me to manage at the beginning of the day. But even that language, right, is implying that the kid is the problem, where maybe it's I am the one who needs to take a break, right? Like, what am I doing between sessions? Did I just do 5 sessions in a row? And that's really past my capacity in the moment, right? And in particular, when you know, multiple kids are struggling, or multiple kids are in the working phase, right? What am I doing to make sure that my last client is to get the same part of me that my first client gets, and they're not getting like less of me in session? So I was just thinking of that because I think sometimes when I can recall some of these cases, they tend to be later on my schedule in the day instead of in the beginning, or the session. These sessions fall at like a time when I'm like so overwhelmed, right? Because I'm thinking of something recent where just my day was packed, right? And I was like running from one thing to another, and like there were just slow frustrations happening throughout the day. Maybe I wasn't getting the support I needed, or someone didn't follow through on something, right? And then I had to jump into a client session, and then I think my client felt that, right? And was kind of responding because I was different in this space with them because I really wasn't clear minded. I don't want to say I wasn't level headed, but I think I was like bogged down by these other things that were happening during the day to really get focused and fully present for this client. And that client conveyed that to me. Maybe not in words, but in behaviors. Like this client started to push more limits, started to test things. And I think she was trying to convey, right? Like you're not here, so like, I'm going to do things to help you become present, almost, you know, like helping me do the job that I'm supposed to be doing. And so I don't know. I think sometimes that all plays out in the room.
Well, I think this is definitely like an interesting thing to talk about. And I just am so impressed that you are willing to do this while on vacation in another country across the
Oh my
ocean.
gosh.
So.
Yeah, no. I mean, I love what we do. I love getting to share these parts because we talk about this all the time. Maggie and I have these conversations off the podcast, right? So it's kind of fun to be ourselves on the podcast, but then also bring them to you guys. I had a boss once who said, you shouldn't shelter the skills you have so others can't duplicate them, right? Like our gift should be giving our skills away and helping everyone respond to kids. Wouldn't the world be a better place if more people were responding to kids instead of reacting to kids? And I'm like, yeah, that's for having some tool sets in their toolbox to help in these moments. And so I think it just offers us an opportunity to do that.
And I think it really demonstrates how firmly and like completely we believe in what we're doing, that we want to give it away for free because we want people to see differently because we care about it and we believe in it. I hope that that's what people are experiencing is that we just are trying to kind of look at kids differently.
Well, and I think in a time and space where the world feels so out of control sometimes, which is a session we're going to have coming up here of, you know, like how do we help ourselves to show up? Right? But kids are feeling that too. If we're feeling that, our kids are feeling that too. And they're and not only are they feeling it from society, they're feeling it from their caregivers, they're feeling it from their teachers, from their therapists and other things, right? Like people aren't showing up as authentically as they can, which can be a confusing message for kids. And so I don't know. I think that's, what drives us is to help more people show up in ways that are connecting and healing for kids than hurting, accidentally conveying messages that we don't intend to convey to kids. So I don't think anyone comes into this world and say, I want to hurt this kid today. I want them to feel rejected by me. I want them to know that I'm the one who's totally in control of the city. Like, I don't know that any, I hope people don't go into relationships like that. I'm sure some people do, but I would hope the majority don't go into relationships like that. If you're with an adult, if you're with a partner, if you're with a friend, or if you're with children, right? Children deserve the same respect that we give adults. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Christy. I appreciate you. I see your watch. It says it's 10:37. Oh my gosh. I hope you get a sleep.
Know.
Have fun
I
on your
will.
watch tour. Tell your
Thanks.
family I said hi.
I will. I
And it was
will.
good to see you.
I know.
I'll see you
Always good to
soon.
see you, Maggie.
Yeah. All right. Have a good night.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Night.